How are you feeling physically these days? I know you were pretty close to 1,000 tackles in your career. Those got to take a toll on your body there.
Well, I feel okay. You know, you got aches and pains, a little tendonitis, but for the most part, you know, I'm hanging in there. You know, what do you expect after 11 years of playing in the NFL? You're not going to be, you know, 100% healthy, but I get around and, you know, I make it through the day.
Yeah. What are you keeping yourself busy with these days?
Well, you know, I got my foundation. That actually, I got my golf tournament Tuesday, which I'm very excited about. You know, I am looking forward to that, which is Glen Head Country Club. I have my own wine out of Napa, California, so and I own my own printing company. So between those three and three kids and a wife, you know, I stay pretty busy.
Yeah, I have two kids and a wife, and I barely get time to you know, make a phone call by myself. I'm sure you know what that's like. Can you tell me a little bit about your foundation?
Well, what I do is that the Victor Green Foundation mission, my passions are, you know, education, health and wellness, and character. So I give money to other organizations or other charities that support those same visions, that have the programs already in place. And this year, the Victor Green Foundation, we're giving monies to the Dare to Be program, which is a homeless program in New York City, and Kips Bay Boys and Girls Club, which out of the Bronx. I'm also sponsoring two kids from the AJGA, underserved kids, to have the opportunity to play in different golf events. And then I have a foundation that I started in 94 called Professional Partners, a youth development, it's a mentoring program in my hometown, Americus, Georgia. So those are the recipients that will be benefiting from my tournament on Tuesday. So very excited about it, and I'm looking forward to the great weather in New York this week. So I'm very excited.
Who do you think it was that instilled not only your drive to be successful, but, you know, your desire to take care of others?
Speak up a little bit, Chris. I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Who was it, do you think, that gave you that drive not only to be successful, but you seem to have a strong interest in, you know, taking care of those who need it? Who is that person who instilled that in you?
Well, my mom. I have to say my mom has been my inspiration. You know, growing up with, you know, five other siblings, and watching her day in and day out work as hard as she had to work to take care of us, man. So she's been my inspiration, and she's given me the drive, the dedication, the perseverance to really, you know, get through day to day and being able to understand what I had to go through. And that's why, you know, I've taken the torch to want to give back too, because I know the parents out there that have a hard time raising and supporting a family, and my mom definitely has been the inspiration and spearhead in that.
Yeah, I could bet it feels pretty amazing to know, like, you know, all those lives you touch and help after football. Probably you know, in a way greater than what you were doing when you were playing football, is to be able to actually just help those who need it. It's pretty amazing, Victor.
Well, you know, this is, you know, I mean, football has given me a lot. But the gratification I feel, or I get, to see these kids and the smiles on their face, the expression when they come around and the things we do for them, you know, it's almost no greater feeling. It's almost like your kid's been born. And, and no, that's the inspiration I feel when I get these kids and see the smiles on their face.
Yeah, having little kids myself, I can definitely relate. You know, get me a little bit clumped here. Jesus. Okay, I want to switch gears to your playing time a little bit. I just got some, you know, some pretty easy ones here. Is there any tight ends you played against that were like the Gronk of your era, like the guys who were just physically you know, bigger and faster than everyone else at the position?
You know, just coming to mind, you know, Shannon Sharp. You know, he was a Hall of Fame, you know, tight end that was, you know, by far probably the best, you know, Gronk type of receiver that, you know, that was in our era. You know, he was fast, he was physical, he could catch. He just was an explosive type of tight end slash receiver type of a guy. So, you know, definitely Shannon Sharp. You know, is that Gronk of that era for sure.
So what you try, I would assume what you try to do to slow down a guy like that is to make him pay every time he caught the ball.
Well, you got to stay physical on those guys, and that's the, you know, the things that I see with Gronk and, you know, him being so successful is guys let him run. You know, you treat him like a receiver, and you got to treat him like a tight end. So you got to get up in his face. You got to be physical with him, and you got to make it hard for him to get off the ball. Now, it's not as easy as it sounds, but, you know, I think you can definitely limit his touches, you know, by being, you know, a little bit more physical with him. He's such a dynamic player, and, you know, it's going to be a hard task for any safety, more or less than a linebacker, to try to cover him on a consistent basis. But you got to be physical with him, and you got to double team him, and, you know, when you can.
Do you think if you played during this era, it would be even harder to stop a guy like that because you can't be as physical as you were allowed to be when you played?
Yeah, no question. No question. You know, the rules have changed so much. You know, the commissioners, you know, really trying to make the job a lot safer, the game, if you will, a lot safer. But it will be tough to cover a guy, but that's, you know, you know, not so much though, but, you know, you got to get up in his face. You got to get him at the line of scrimmage. And that's where you're going to limit Gronk touches. You got to be physical within that 5-yard space. And I think, you know, that's in the confine of the game. But, you know, that's what you got to do to that, a guy like that. And I think, you know, even now, you're still able to do that. So that's the best tactic, I think, to approach playing a guy like Gronk.
If you had a time machine, would you have asked Mo Lewis not to hit Bledsoe and let him run out of bounds? And when you saw the young Tom Brady coming on the field, were you like, oh, look at this rookie, and, you know, your eyes light up a little bit?
I like Drew, and you know, he was a good quarterback. You know, you never want to see, you know, guys get hurt and go out the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously that was the start of Tom's career. But, the time machine thing, you know, it is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
But, it was good for Tom, you know. Still had a little bit of success that year, you know, with them, and Tom came in and did a great job, took him to the Super Bowl, no pressure on him. but it was just one of those things, man. You know, either quarterback, you know, either one of those guys, but, you know, can get you at some point. So, you know, congrats to Tom. He's had a great career.
When you're in the locker room, who's, like, if you guys were having a bad game or was real tense, who is the one guy you could count to lighten the mood up?
Yeah, we had a few guys. You know, Mo Lewis was always, you know, he was call him a class clown, but, you know, always the jokester. You know, Hugh Douglas back in the days was that one of those type guys. This was loud, and Marvin Jones was like that. You know, so it was, so we had a few characters in the locker room that always kept the mood pretty light. And, you know, especially when Parcells came, when it came with this tight grip, you know, we kept everything pretty light in there. So we was able to, you know, guys got along and keep the mood kind of relaxed and, you know, kept guys going.
You missed the locker room?
You know, you miss your camaraderie for sure. You know, you know these guys are your family. I mean, because you during that pretty much, you know, 9 months. I mean, you round them more than you round your family. So you create a bond for sure, and you know, so that's what, you know, most guys would say is that camaraderie that you miss in that locker room, especially when you leave the game. So I do miss that. You know, I've been fortunate to have taken away some friendships that, you know, we keep in touch to this day. And, you know, but that's a special time. So guys are your family, and some guys kind of stray away. But the relationship that you build with those special core guys, you know, you definitely miss that.
Any of them, any, like, specific guy who you've lost touch with over the years who you're – kind of think about, I wonder what he's doing, or I wish he'd call me back. Do you have one of them?
No. I mean, you know, my guys are my guys, and we always kept in touch, you know. It's been a long time now, and, you know, we still communicate to this day. So it hasn't been any guys, you know, I do a lot of events and appearances, so I'm always running into ex-teammates and ex, you know, guys that I played against. So, you know, so I stay pretty close to the game, and, you know, meet up with a lot of ex-players that I played against. So it's kind of fun and, you know, kind of keep you in the game, if you will.
When you left the Jets at the end of your career, can you tell me a little bit about that? Was it your choice, and is there a part of you who wishes you got to play every down in a Jets uniform?
No question. You know, I think that's that time machine question that you want to ask.
Yeah.
I think this is the appropriate time to ask that question. For sure. I definitely wanted to retire Jet, no question about that. And, you know, I think it was kind of out of my hands, you know, the decision, you know, that had to happen. But, you know, if I had the time machine, definitely I think they would do things differently, and I would have made a different decision. So Jets is still my team, you know, always be green and white. And, you know, but, you know, things happen, and you move on. And, you know, but, you know, I don't regret decisions that I made, you know, but, you know, if you had to do things over, you know, you grow and learn a little bit, and, you know, you probably would have thought about it a little harder. So my advice to young guys that's out there and, you know, looking at these contracts and maybe get a million here, a million there, more, you know, grass not always green on the other side. And you really need to think long and hard, and you need to make that decision, not your agent, not your family. You need to make that decision. And, like, again, if I had to do it all over again, probably would have did it differently.
Yeah, you know, on the other hand, once it's over, it's over. It's not like, you know, you could have stopped playing football then 4 or 5 years down the road being like, yeah, I'll go out and have another season.
It's
am I right? I mean, that's a pretty hard reality, I bet. You know,
when it's over, it's over. When it's over, it's over, man. So, so it's you know, it's a small window. You know, it's a small window of opportunity there, and you know, you see guys now taking advantage of all that money being passed around, and you got to get it now. It's definitely a business, and you got to treat it that way. If anybody look at it any other way, then, you know, they're gonna be fooling themselves. You know, they look at it as a business, talking about the team, and you have to do the same thing. So, you know, like I said, once it's over, it's over. You have to make the best decision for you and your family, and you move on.
We got a couple other quick ones for you. I know your time's short, Victor. Okay, just a real quick story. So I'm in line at the Albany Airport in New York. And Al Roker's standing in front of me. You know who Al Roker is?
I do.
Okay, so there's me jumping up and down to my wife going, "It's Al Roker, it's Al Roker," until he turns around and he says to me, "I know I'm Al Roker." And I kind of stopped at that point. Do you ever have those moments yourself, like because you were a professional football player, you got to meet somebody who kind of, you know, a celebrity who you're like, oh, my God, it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger or somebody like that?
Not really, man. I've met a lot of different people, and I don't really get too, I guess you want to call it, starstruck or whatever, because I'm always around big guys. So I just meet a lot of people, man, and I kind of put myself in the same situation, not the same situation, but, I've been professional, you're professional,
yep,
just because this or that. But I don't, I respect everybody, and I respect everybody what they've done and what they do. And now, they see me, I hope they treat me with the same type of respect. So that's how I just handle anybody that I meet,
Nice.
If I meet Muhammad Ali, which I have, but if I, I meet him, you want to respect that guy. Hey, he going to respect you for being a professional athlete like myself. So, it's just all respect, man. I think as long as you respect each other, then it's all good.
Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes I need my wife to put me back in my place to relax a little bit. So, I learned my lesson.
It happens, man.
So, the last one I got for you, you're stuck on a desert island, and you have to live with one of your teammates that you played with at some point in your career. Who would you pick?
That's a tough one. Aaron Glenn and I was roommates for many years. We got along really well, and, we had great conversations. You're stuck on the island, you got to need somebody that you like. And that you like, he's a fighter. He's, he's someone that's going, keep the mood and keep you calm, So, I would say Aaron Glenn, because him and I are really close to this day. And, him and my boy, Adrian Morrell, two guys that I go to bat for, man. So, I have to pick two of those guys to, to be on the island with and just wing it and make it out of there somehow.
Thank you. Let me tell you, on my all-time Jets team, you're playing safe. You can say you wish you retired a Jet, but you're a Jet to every fan who ever watched the team. I mean, that's what you are. Did you get to go back and sign a one-day contract or like that?
I did. In 2006, I went back and I signed a one-day deal to retire the team that I love, and it was great, going back for that one day and being able to say, hey, I retired the team that I came in for, and it was special, and today I will always remember, and and I had to do that over again. I'll do that too and sign with them all over again.
It was like, it's something like 160 Sundays that, I sat there watching you play, man. So thank you for everything. Thank you for your time. I know it's an evening of your time, but it's a lifetime of memory for me. So thank you very much, Victor. I appreciate everything.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. And I hope I gave you what you want, man.
I just want to
let everybody, let the fans know to check out my website, victorgreenfoundation.org.
Yep.
And I got some great auction items that I'm gonna be putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's up there right now that I'm gonna be auctioning off at the tournament. So you can win a Jets, fan experience. I got two of those up there. I'll take you to the game, meet the fans on the sideline.
You get
a free trip to Bermuda, a free trip to Fort Lauderdale. So check out the website, victorgreenfoundation.org, and you'll see some great stuff up there.